AirScent is what we do. So we track to get certified, but we AirScent when we work. 95% of the time we're going to be doing some kind of AirScent work. So what happens is the dog is going to detect your scent, chemicals, by the wind source, by the wind currents. The dog is able to determine using left or right nostril where the scent is the strongest, which blows my mind. So humans shed between 40 and 60,000 skin rafts a minute. A minute. You know the character Pigpen from Peanuts? And he always has that cloud by his feet of dirt? That's what we look like to a dog. Only it's not dirt, it's their skin rafts. They're invisible flakes of skin that fall off of our body. They contain sweat, bacteria, parasites, As these skin rafts start to decay, they're going to emit odor. Those skin rafts are picked up by the wind, and the larger the source, the larger the scent cone that's coming off of the source. So if you think about a human is going to have a very large scent cone. It's going to be finest at the body, and then it's going to spread out like an ice cream cone. And so what the dog is able to do is, as they cross over this scent cone, the left nostril is going to say, there's nothing here. The right nostril is going to say, there's a lot here. So the dog knows it's on the left side, or sorry, on the right side. So it's going to make a turn. And so what we see our dogs doing is finer and finer, finer until they get to the person. Those skin rafts are different for each of us. So even though I said we don't do scent discrimination, we don't say go find Timmy. In this case, it's go and find anyone out there. So if we're searching in the bush somewhere and someone is still in there, they haven't cleared out, even though it's a lost person scene, their scent is going to interfere, and yes, our dogs could go and find them. It's not a problem, it's just something that can happen. Our skin rafts are, the scent is different based on ethnicity, diet, hygiene, laundry detergent. Each of us smells different that way. So these skin rafts go off in the wind. They get stopped by rocks, by trees. They get hung up in bushes. So our dogs have to work their way through that. The dog will do a trained final response when they find a person. So for my dogs, they've always done what's called a bark and hold. When they get to the person, they will just start barking until I get there. I did have a problem when I started working with Xena, and that was she had to kiss the person before she would start barking. Probably not a great thing in a lost person case, if they're afraid of dogs, if they're injured. Nobody wants a dog in their face kissing them. So it was a lot of work to get her to back off and just bark from a distance, because it was just in her brain that she had to go in, kiss the person, and then she would bark. The other trained final response is one that's a little bit more glamorous to watch. People always like watching a dog do what's called a recall refind. The dog will go out, they'll find the missing person, they'll leave the missing person. They'll return to the handler, they'll somehow tell the handler. A lot of people do a body bang, and a body bang is when the dog literally jumps up on you from a flying leap. So they run into you and they just fly at you and hit you. They're supposed to kind of aim for the stomach, but depending on the height of the person, that gentleman who was tracking the Black Shepherd, he had a much deeper voice when I first met him. It is very high-pitched now because his dog does do a body bang. They do the body bang, and they say to the handler, I got somebody. So the handler says, show me, and the two of them go together back to the missing person. That's our trained final response. We have to do this in all kinds of different scenarios. Dogs do not generalize, so we have to keep changing the scenario and make it more complicated. You could start with just a person sitting there out in the open, and then you have to build to maybe that person is eating. What's the dog going to do? Now that person is standing up and they're dancing. What's the dog going to do? The person takes a stick and swings it at the dog. What's the dog going to do? These are all scenarios we have to work through. Because if my dog can't go into her bark and hold because the person's eating a granola bar, there's a problem. So you can see in the first one, there's someone who's elevated. They're up in a tree. They're covered in that space blanket stuff. The second picture is Zena, and the person is inside a little hut. Not only did she have to find the person in the hut, but she had to figure out how to get to the person in the hut. If she couldn't have, she would have just stayed and barked at the door. But she was able to open up the door. In the third picture, that is a play area in Elmvale called Rounds Ranch for kids. And it's quite a hike to get up there in terms of you've got stairs, you've got little bridges, you've got all these weird things for the dog that they have to go through, a tunnel, before they get to the very top of this climbing apparatus. So she had to do that. And when she gets there, she still has to go to her bark and hold. The first picture on this slide is actually from a search that we were on that is still difficult for me to talk about. This is Huckleberry Island. We were searching for a 10-year-old boy. We were told that he was shy, didn't know how to swim. But as they started to give us other details about him, it became quite clear to me as a former teacher that this boy sounded autistic, and the parents weren't labeling him as being autistic. He wasn't going to answer our calls. He was likely going to hide from us. This particular island, you can see the terrain. There are lots of little nooks and crannies, cracks, holes for this young boy to go into. We were dropped off by a boat. We had to climb up rocks in order to get onto the island so that we could start our search. So that's her just waiting for me to get up there, because trust me, it took me a lot longer than it took her to get up there. Sadly, the little boy was found. He was deceased. He was in the water. The picture on the snow picture, there's actually somebody in there. Sometimes people will cover themselves in snow when they're lost in the wintertime, thinking it'll keep them warm. So this is her going, finding through the crack, picks up the odor, has to go through. You've got a boy in the bottom picture in a culvert. Kids are going to hide. Is she going to be willing to go into the culvert and find the little boy? The next one is about air scenting also. So we're still talking about those pig pen skin rafts that our body loses. Only this time it's articles. So if the lost person is walking and they take their hat off and they lose it. Hats are full of odor. If you think about a ball cap, that brim around your head is going to have sweat on it. It's going to have skin on it. It's going to have oil on it. These things are releasing a lot of odor. So now again, we have to get quite creative because the dogs don't generalize. So if the only thing that I put down are hats and mittens and gloves, my dog is going to make the assumption that that's the only thing they're supposed to be looking for. And we all know that we drop some pretty weird things when we're out and about. So it could be a pen. It could be an empty cigarette package. It could be a gum wrapper. Absolutely anything that somebody might drop. in the bush, when you're lost, you could be dropping things that are even a little more unusual. Granola wrapper is not so unusual, but anything that maybe you were using for camping, like a flint type of thing. And what we do is we take an article that may not represent everything that could be dropped, but it is something that is a material that could represent a multitude of things. So, for example, I would work my dog on a hunk of metal. Metal does not hold a lot of odor. It's smooth. It's not porous. What does hold a lot of odor is anything fabric. Fabric and leather. They're going to hold a lot of odor. And then as you start to move through, you've got plastic, not very porous, but if it's textured plastic, it's going to hold scent. Wood is porous. It's going to hold scent. So to mimic something that a lost person might drop that is wooden, we put chopsticks out for the dog to find. We put rulers out, paint stirrers, anything made of that material so that the dog starts to understand anything is an article if it has fresh human scent on it. So this particular space that we're in, I think it's a toothbrush that she's holding. Again, they have to have some type of trained final response. So as I said, when she finds a person, she does a bark and hold. When she finds an article, she does a retrieve. She picks it up and she brings it to me. This is how we started teaching them back when I first started in 2001 or 2002 with dogs. That's what the OPP wanted. Now they want the dog to stay with the article and either sit at it or go into a down, which makes sense because otherwise the dog's actually moving what could be a clue. So for Xena, this girl, she actually does a retrieve. People do a recall refind. So there we go with that male handler friend of mine whose dog does a body bang, even if it's a hat that she finds. So he's getting hit in the belly a lot. And I say belly with quotation marks around it. You can always tell when she hit him badly. Sorry?
He's on the ground.
Yeah. You know, you chose to be a canine handler. So the first picture, and I'm just going to preface this one for a moment. This happens to be at the super jail. And the super jail has been a godsend to me. They have been maintaining their fields around the super jail for the last 20-some-odd years. One year, I noticed the vegetation was getting taller and taller, and we want the grass to be short for tracking so that the dog really has to stick their nose in there good and deep. And I thought, okay, something's going on. They're busy, or they just don't think this is the right time of year to be, or right time of the season to be cutting. But it started to get, you know, we were almost losing little dogs in there. So I went into the prison, and I spoke with the superintendent, and he said, I had no idea you were out there. And I said, yeah, we've been out there for, you know, like 20 years. I teach out there. I teach tracking out there. So he said, I didn't know. And as soon as I explained to him what we were doing and who we are, he said, my guys will be out there by the end of the day and they'll cut it. They have been amazing. And if you've ever been around the super jail, you can see how much terrain there is. Now, some of it they're maintaining for themselves. That would be the inside of the fence. The outside of the fence is what they're maintaining for me. It started to get really contaminated. People were showing up. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry who owned a dog was showing up. Dog walkers were showing up. And some of them would become a little bit angry when I told them that they can't work here. It's maintained for us and our training. And we had a few discussions about it. Beautiful property, absolutely gorgeous. I can get at least a 2-kilometer track in for the dog. And they do it for nothing. Every month I show up with a bag full of K candies or cookies or something at Christmas. I send pizza to them. That's all. So they've been absolutely amazing. So this is the outside of the prison. There's a tiny piece of article that has been tucked behind the no trespassing sign. And that's what the dog has found. The second picture is at the fairgrounds. They also have given us permission to use the fairgrounds when they're not in use. And when are they not in use? That is the busiest place in Lindsay. That's a fairly good size article that she's found. That's a big mitten. Then she's working in the bush. So you can see we've got all these different terrains, different articles, different scenarios that are set up. The one with the no trespassing sign was one that was actually a part of a search once where the lost person had climbed the fence and ripped their clothing on the fence. Now, it wasn't necessarily behind a no trespassing sign, but, you know, we got to make it a little more difficult for them. And then in the last picture, that's Zena, and she's found something, and that's in the bush. So you're lost, you sit down on a log, you have a drink, you drop your water bottle, your granola wrapper. Those are the kinds of things that she's picking up. The first picture here, she's got to demonstrate some agility for me. She's got to prove to me that when she has odor, she's willing to push through. And she's climbing up on stacked picnic tables, which are wobbling, in order to get an article that's shoved up at the top. Middle picture, we're in a playground. Child was last seen, perhaps, pedaling on that scoop thingy, whatever they're called. Drop something in the sand. Dog's got to find it. Last picture, this is not one that we do very often because it is just far too difficult for the dog. We went into the arena in Aurelia. You can imagine how many things they could find in an arena. And so it was very hard for them to decide which one is important. So we don't do that very often. But what it again demonstrates is the dog is climbing stairs. They're going through all these seats. They're squeezing through different areas. The next part is on human remains detection, and that happens to be my passion right now. I retired my dog in December, and much to my husband's chagrin, I got a puppy to take his place. And if you saw my husband and the amount of wounds on his arms and legs, yeah, he's not happy. We don't certify through the OPP. We certify through North American Police Work Dog Association. The dogs are tested in six different disciplines. They have to be able to find human remains in a building, buried in a rubble pile, and a rubble pile could be a compost pile that's still steaming. It could be anything that has height that they expect the dog to comfortably climb and find. Water is the most difficult, and then we have open area and we have vehicle. Water is extremely difficult because the source will create an oil slick. It is an actual change that you see on the surface of the water. And the longer the source is in the water, the greater this oil slick becomes. It's not really an oil slick, but that's what it looks like. You can see a different shape in the water. Their tests are only done in the States. So every year I was going to Massachusetts to certify him. And it's the same principle with the live find dogs. We have to keep changing up the scenario. Bad people do really sneaky things. So we need to make sure that the dogs are checking in spots that normally would not be checked. The first one is one of the buildings at the fairgrounds, and the source is elevated quite high. It's actually a rib bone, a single rib bone, and it's quite high. He can't reach it, but he still has to tell me that there's something there. The odor from the rib bone is going to drop down to the floor. Odor flows like water. So it's going to leave the source, and it's just going to dribble down, and it's going to create a scent pool on the ground. So the dog starts with the scent pool, and then they have to work up to where the source is the strongest, where the scent is the strongest. The middle picture, that's a boat. That's the inside of a boat. He had to go in there and check. He had to check all of those overhead cabinets to make sure that there wasn't anything stuck up there. Because we're not only looking for actual body parts, it could be a weapon that has fluid on it, blood on it. The first picture here, and he, by the way, does his trained final response is, it started as a bark, and then he was supposed to down. And then it became not so much of a bark. You know those old-fashioned fire bells that they would crank up? The sirens, I guess I should call them. Well, that's kind of what his bark became. It was just like a hop, 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 until finally I'd get a bark out of him. And it could take a while. And then he developed something that we called his whisper. So that's his quiet bark, because we might be somewhere where he shouldn't be loud. That is a mannequin that was being used for live find searching. And we thought, well, let's just use it for the boy. So somewhere there, I can't see from my version of the picture, but somewhere there is a mason jar filled with placenta. And that's what he's scenting. We use placenta a lot. Placenta is the source that we start with. It represents the flesh of the body, the blood of the body, and we want it to go through its natural decomposition. So we don't take it out of the freezer, have the dog use it, and then put it back in the freezer. We keep it out. We use it for about 6 months, and we want it to go through all those different stages. Bodies have, cadaver bodies have, approximately 480 volatile compounds. Volatile odor compounds. If we could isolate which of those 480 the dogs are actually scenting, our training would become that much easier. But we don't. We don't know what the dogs are smelling. We don't know what part of the human remains these dogs are actually scenting. So somewhere in that mannequin, which was just for fun, I think it's between his knees, there is a mason jar. The second picture is, again, we are constantly changing things for the dog. This one is buried. It's buried in snow. So it could be a person who was out lost. They weren't found. They got covered with snow. So there are two examples of the rubble piles that he has to do. The first one, there are those cement thingies. I'm sure they have a name, but thingies is what they are. There was some kind of source in there. The dogs are proofed off of animal. We get this question a lot. In our training, we don't clear the area, and there's always going to be something dead where we're training. I have been known to stop at the roadside and pick up roadkill and put it in the back of my, I got some eyes open, and put it in the back of my vehicle, because I don't want him to think that it's the same thing. It smells different. Don't tell me about it. I don't need to know. But if you see me on the roadside picking up a dead squirrel, that's why. The second picture, that is actually, I believe it's a compost pile. There is source just, the evaluator would have just shoved something in there. The dog's got to not only climb, but they've also got to find where the scent is coming from. Remember I said scent flows like water, so the scent is going to eventually make its way down to the bottom of the hill. The dog can't go to the bottom of the hill and say, I smell it. That's great that you smell it, buddy, but where is it? Where is it coming from? So he has to learn to follow that odor trail and work it up to where the source is. We do two types of water. We do shoreline, which is obvious. And then we do boat training. We do open water searches. We often work with the Coast Guard. This particular one, you can see he's in the front of the boat. And I've got some great shots of me holding on to him, and somebody from my team is holding on to me. because we're leaning that far over the front of the zodiac. What happens is the dog steers the boat, which is absolutely amazing to me. The dog steers the boat with their nose. I don't know what those side inflated things are called on a zodiac. I call them gunnels, but that's not what they are. But I'm going to use that word. You can see he is over to one side. His nose is over to one side. His body is over to one side. That tells me that his right nostril is getting more scent. So he's shifting his body in order to equalize it. I have to get the boat now to do the same thing that his head is doing so that he is able to get scent coming right at him. So you can see my arm stuck out. So I'm telling the boat driver, I need you to turn. Absolutely amazing to watch these dogs working open water. His indication, as I told you, is a wind-up bark and a down. In the boat, it completely changes. He can't get his bark out, and he can't do a down because the down is taking him away from the source because it involves him lying in the bottom of the zodiac. So what he does is he starts to come over the gunwale. He wants to get his nose as close to the water as possible. I don't want him bailing out of the boat, so I hold on to him. Now I'm almost out of the boat, so somebody else is holding on to me. It becomes this whole little parade. These two are open area. The first one is just woods somewhere, beautiful set of woods somewhere where he's looking. And remember, when somebody passes away and their body is in something like the bush, it very quickly becomes disarticulated because of animals. And even birds will take advantage. So body parts are going to be removed. They're going to end up scattered. So it could just be a single bone that he's looking for. It doesn't have to be a large part of the body. The second picture is in Montreal, and that's an actual case that he was working. That is McGill University, which was Queen Victoria Hospital. It was believed that while it was Queen Victoria Hospital, bodies were being buried outside of the building. I can't go into much more detail, but they want to start doing some construction. They have to make sure that that ground is cleared of any possible remains. Most of the remains would belong to the Mohawk Nation. So on this particular search, we had archaeologists, anthropologists, videographers. We had government officials. We had workers from the construction. And we had representatives of the Mohawk Nation. And it's absolutely amazing when you say the area is clear. The Mohawk Nation, their representatives are pretty calm about it. Their face is quite neutral. Government officials, neutral. Construction workers, smiling from ear to ear. Because now they know they can continue on. Versus if we say our dogs had odor, now we've got the Mohawk Nation smiling. The government may stay neutral, but the construction workers are not happy with us. This would be vehicle search. That's actually a downed plane behind that vehicle that he's searching. It could be anywhere. It could be up in the wheel well. It could be inside the vehicle. It could be in the cabin of the vehicle. The very first vehicle search that I did, the source, the scent, the cadaver source was actually in the front of the truck. It was in the console of the truck. And my dog went in, and we're not allowed to open anything. We can't open the glove box. We can't open any kind of consoles. We just have to say, I believe the source is in here. While I was trying to get my dog to exit the vehicle, he was quite young at the time. Instead of extending his legs, for some reason he retracted the landing gear. He brought all four legs up under him, and he just landed with a great big thud. That was our first experience with vehicles. He thought, I don't know if I like them. I have no idea why he retracted the landing gear. But if you saw him now, he's quite broken. The picture with him standing on his back legs here, that's a train, an overturned train. If you wonder where we get things like airplanes and turned over trains, this is Base Borden, where they do their training, and they allow us to go and train there also. It's like Disneyland for us. Here he's checking a plane. It was actually, I believe, in the top of a wing, but again, scent drops, so he's going to have the odor below it. The most recent thing that we've gotten involved in is historical human remains. So having been a handler for the number of years that I have been, and I retired early, by the way, from teaching so that I could pursue this more, my body is very broken up. I've had more surgeries than I can tell you. And so I was ready to quit. I can't do it anymore. I'm not helping anyone if I can't move with any kind of speed and grace through the bush. Just trust me, the one thing I'm not in the bush is graceful. I'm on my rear end more often than I'm not. So I thought, okay, I think it's time to retire. Did I? No. I just got a puppy. I told you that. I got a puppy. And so what we've branched out into is something that has no organization who tests us. It doesn't exist yet. It is so new. Historical human remains is a very difficult discipline for a dog to do. They have to be good with cadaver. They have to be excellent human remains detection dogs. If you imagine a jar of placenta, there's a lot of odor coming off of that as it starts to decay. When we're talking about bones that are 150 years old, there's not a lot of scent coming off. It's called low profile. It hovers to the ground. It sticks to tree lines. It sticks to fences, particularly rock fences, because over the years, there's always a predominant wind no matter where you are. And that predominant wind has blown those gases to a fence, to a tree line, year after year after year. So what our dogs are doing is they're not telling us there's a body right here. They're saying there's odor right here. There's your information. Do with it what you will. Ideally, we need to be able to train on unmarked graves. Not easy to do. If I asked every one of you in here, do you know of an unmarked grave? You know where it is, but it's not marked. I don't think any of you could put up your hand and say, yeah, I can help you out with that. Because if you can, I'm going to be a little worried. Not many of us have access to unmarked graves, but ideally that's what we need. So instead we work in cemeteries. We work in the old section of cemeteries, and we want to make sure that we're working with graves that are at least 100 years old before they did any kind of embalming and before the caskets were encased in cement. That's the ideal scenario for us. We're trying not to be disrespectful. The dogs aren't running through there willy-nilly having a game of ball. They're not peeing on headstones. We are working them respectfully through there and then getting them out as quickly as possible. So what is giving us all of our call-outs now, all of our deployments, all of our searches would be Indigenous schools. The residential schools across Canada. We have been from Ontario all the way to Yellowknife, working Indigenous schools. It's extremely difficult. The work is difficult for the dogs. It's difficult for the handlers. The handlers, we come home and the first thing that we have to do is shut ourselves off from the world and just have a few days of self-care. It is extremely difficult work. And as I said, there isn't an organization that is certifying us, so we do have people popping out of the woodwork who are saying that they can do the work. What we do is we have 3 canine that go out. Those 3 canine work individually, independently. They cannot be seen by anyone else. They cannot be seen by any of the handlers. When they have finished their search area, they come back and they talk to the data specialist. Until my dog, the puppy, is ready to do this type of work, which will be years, I'm the data specialist, so they come to me and they tell me if their dog had any interest, if their dog went into their trained final response, and I write it down. All 3 dogs will go through all the different areas, and each time they're finished an area, they come back and they tell me. They tell me in private so that no one else is aware. All 3 dogs will work every area. I compile that data and I make a decision as to whether or not another dog needs to go into there, another as in one of those 3. Perhaps they need to go in there and clear the area once more because 2 other dogs said there's something here. And as I mentioned before, the dogs aren't finding bodies. They're finding odor. And odor moves like water. So if it's a body up at the top of the hill, the dog could find the odor at the bottom of the hill. It makes it extremely difficult, but often what we're doing is we're coming up from behind ground-penetrating radar. It could be that the residential school had ground-penetrating radar there 2 months, 3 months ahead of us. They may have found some anomalies, and that is usually an area that the indigenous community is asking us to search. They don't tell us why. They just say, these are the areas we need you to search. This would be my boy's last deployment. This is a residential school in on Mission Island. Actually working right inside the residential school, if it's still there. There are some communities who want the school torn down. They don't want any memory of it. Just get rid of it. There are others that want it to remain because it's an important part of their history that they don't want to ever forget. The cruelty and the abuse is real, and they don't want to forget by just tearing down a building because it's still going to be inside them. Often they will take an area of it and have it reclaimed as something different. Where we were in Edmonton, we were in Blue Quills. The residential school is being turned into a part of the university. So they don't want it torn down. They don't want that part of their history removed. We are extremely respectful when we're working with the Indigenous. There are always ceremonies that we are a part of. Incredible honor to be included in some of these cemeteries, in some of these ceremonies. We were a part of a pipe ceremony, and they have to tell us ahead of time, this is what you do when you go into the teepee, because you don't want to offend anyone. So when that pipe comes around, if you don't want to smoke it, what do you do with it? Well, you hold it to your heart, and then you pass it on. And to hear the elders and the keepers of knowledge sharing information, singing, chanting, prayers said in Cree, and they're acknowledging our dogs. It was an absolute honor to be a part of that, and everywhere we go, this is the type of experience that we have with the dogs. The one on where I'm in the bush with Zappa, that was a case that we were doing near Tofino, BC. The one in the middle is a school that they have taken at least 1 floor of the school and they've turned it into a daycare and a community center where kids can go and learn how to make different crafts. So this particular daycare, you would think, well, why on earth would we be searching the inside of a daycare? It would be because that brick wall that you see behind the radiator. That's an original wall. And so based on stories that survivors have told, perhaps that wall has significance. So they're asking us to check those exterior walls. The picture where Zappa's out on the grass, as if we had have continued walking, if I had have continued walking, where that little tiny alcove is, it just kind of juts out, or juts in, I should say, towards the bush. Zappa gave me an indication there telling me that there's odor. Does that mean there's a body buried there, right there? I don't know. But consistently, he was telling me there was odor there. And then the other dogs, when they went through, they also said that there's odor there. So we tell that to the community. They do what they want. The first picture, the large one, that is a search that we were involved in Sault Ste. Marie. Where the ground is being dug up, the Ojibwe stopped the construction because it was believed that there are buried bodies there, that there are remains there. So the first thing that we had to do was find out where the soil was taken, the soil that had been removed, so that we could put the dogs on the piles of soil to make sure that there weren't any remains in there. Then we checked this part where they were starting to dig. On the far side of the picture, you can see the bucket of a backhoe. I don't know my equipment. I'm going to guess it's a backhoe. Everyone see where I mean? It's a backhoe. Thank you. Because I've been calling it a backhoe for years. All three dogs independently indicated right where that bucket is. In fact, my dog went into the bucket. Is there a body in the bucket? No. Are there remains in the bucket? No. So now all of that deductive reasoning has to happen. So what does that mean? Could it be that the scoop touched soil where there were remains? When we pass, we secrete something called adipocere. Adipocere is a waxy substance. When we're put in the ground, that waxy substance is going to seep into the soil along with all the other fluids as they leave our body. Those fluids will drop down, same as water would, but that adipocere, that waxy substance, that'll stay with the surface of where the body was. So is that possible? Don't know. The picture where all the shoes, I don't know if you remember when the news of the residential schools first came out in like 2021, I might be guessing in that, and it was in Kamloops. They said they found 215 sets of remains, and people were showing up and putting children's shoes on the stairs. This is the same idea. These are the stairs to a residential school that is quite dilapidated. We could not go into it because it was so run down. There is a cemetery there, so yes, they do have cemeteries at some of the residential schools. Only in the cemeteries you would find the nuns, the priests, the teachers. You won't find the children. They're buried outside the cemetery because they're not Christians. You can see some of the things that we put our dogs through. My dog has been repelled into a hole underneath a building. We put them in planes, we put them in trains, we put them in ATVs, and they have to be able to shake it off and get to work. If you're going to need a half hour to recover, then you're not going to do me any good. So this boy was rappelled into the hole, take the rappelling harness off, get to work, my friend. Okay, I got it. That is a dog that has drive and determination and wants to do the work. The other picture, remember I said about the mounds of dirt? This is one of the mounds that he's checking in Sault Ste. Marie. We were near London and we were checking a residential school, and there is a dedication circle. In the center there's fire. They've put the shoes around the fire, but then there are 12 pillars, and they are all some type of pillar of strength. They're all different as you go around. So we had the dogs all pose. And there's an example of, on the left, you have a German Shepherd. In the middle, you have a Dutch Shepherd. And on the end is my boy, who's a Belgian Shepherd, also known as a Malinois. The end.